Penelope's Challenge. Odysseus made his way towards Telemachus, who was standing at the end of one of the long tables, attempting to exert some form of control over the suitors. His face was turning very red as the levels of sneering and mockery increased with their intake of wine. "Please, gentlemen, I just ask that you show some respect, some self-control." Just then, one of the younger suitors, Ctesippus, caught sight of Odysseus.
"Oh, look!" Ctesippus cried. "The master wrestler is back. I've got a lovely present for you, beggar man."
He picked a cow's hoof from a basket on the table and hurled it with all his strength at Odysseus's head. Once more, Odysseus swayed to avoid a missile. This one whistled past his head and hit the stone wall behind him with a loud crack. The loud crack was followed by an even louder bang. Telemachus had slammed an iron plate down on the table.
"Enough!" he shouted.
The hall fell silent. Telemachus stabbed a finger towards Ctesippus.
"You've no idea how lucky you are that our guest turned his head just now. If you had hit him, I'd have speared you like a chicken on a spit, and your rich daddy in Same would be organizing a funeral instead of the wedding that you are, pathetically, I might say, dreaming of."
There was a long silence. Agelaus, also from Same, coughed gently and spoke up.
"Bravely said, young Telemachus. It's entirely charming to see you put on your manliest voice and stand up to us just like a real grown-up. Altogether too endearing. And you make a good point. I'm sure we're all embarrassed by the loutish behaviour of some of our younger friends, who really should know better." He swatted Ctesippus on the back of the head. "I'll undertake to control them, if you undertake something more important."
Telemachus folded his arms, as much to hide their trembling as to strike what he hoped was a confident and authoritative pose.
"Well?
Surely you know that it's time. Bring your mother down and encourage her to choose. Tonight. No more evasions, no more delays. We insist."
The suitors banged their cups on the table in agreement. With a loud scrape from his chair, Theoclymenus stood up, pointed at the suitors, and cried out,
"Oh, you fools! Can't you see the blood running down the walls? Can't you hear the shrieks of your ghosts as they fly down to Hades?"
Demoptolemus of Dulichium hurled the contents of his wine cup at the wall.
"Oh, look!" he cried. "Our blood is running down the walls!"
Theoclymenus put his hands over his ears to drown out the raucous laughter.
"Hear my shrieks!" hooted Ctesippus to his neighbour. "It's my ghost!"
An urgent, hushing noise cut him off. Penelope had appeared at the top of the stairs and was making her way slowly down. As more became aware of her, the suitors fell silent, one by one. Eumaeus and Philoetius had come in from the kitchens to sit at their table below the suitors. They watched the queen descend.
"Wonders will never cease," said Philoetius. "She never comes down," said Eumaeus.
When Penelope came fully into view, they all saw that she was carrying a large cushion. A square of silk was draped over it, concealing whatever was underneath. Two handmaidens followed her down, each bearing a wooden chest.
"Gentlemen, every day you push me harder and harder for a decision. Which of you shall I choose for a husband? And how do I choose? Will it be on the basis of character?
Hardly so. None of you possesses the smallest shred of honour or decency.
Will it be on the basis of your property and wealth?
I have no need of your trash, nor does my son.
Honest poverty in a herdsman's hut appeals to us a great deal more than a life of opulence in the grandest of palaces belonging to such as you.
Or do I, who was married to Odysseus of Ithaca, select you for your wisdom, acumen, and intelligence?
Please, don't make me laugh.
Besides, even if I were to pick you for any of those qualities, they would be hard to test you for, one against the other. Which brings me to strength. A test of both brute strength and skill is easily undertaken, and I know just the way.
She pulled away the square of silk.
Here is my husband's bow. And here his quiver and arrows.
Penelope raised them above her head so that all could see.
This was a gift from Iphitus, son of Eurytus, whose weapon it was.
Yes, gentlemen,
this was the very bow of Eurytus, grandson of the archer god Apollo. Eurytus, the master bowman who taught the hero god Heracles how to shoot.
Eumaeus, Philoetius, lay them on the table.
When Eumaeus took the bow, sharp memories of Odysseus drawing and shooting came flooding back to him, and he could not help but weep as he nuzzled the bow against his cheek.
"Gods alive!" scoffed Antinous. "The old fool is blubbing! Put it on the table as you were told, or I'll kick your ass from here to Corinth."
Eumaeus laid the bow down as tenderly and reverently as if it were a sacred relic, which to him it was. Philoetius set the quiver and arrows next to it.
"Now," said Penelope, "my handmaidens will show you something else."
The handmaidens stepped forward and opened the chests they had been carrying. Each contained, neatly packed, 6 iron axe heads. Each was double-bladed in the Minoan style, with a hole between the blades, above the socket in which the haft would be fitted.
"It is very simple," said Penelope. "Whichever one of you here is capable of stringing the bow, drawing it, and shooting an arrow clean through all 12 axe heads, will be my husband."